3 years ago, last September, I came here on the vice president and spoke at Burke Burnett Park. And I called in that speech for a national security policy and a national security system which was second to none. A position which said not first, but if, when, and how, but first. That city responded to that call as it has through its history. And we have been putting that pledge into practice ever since. And I want to say a word about that pledge here in Fort Worth, which understands national defense and its importance to the security of the United States. During the days of the Indian War, this city was a fort. During the days of World War I, even before the United States got into the war, Royal Canadian Air Force pilots were training here. During the days of World War II, the great Liberator bombers, on which my brother flew with his co-pilot from this city, were produced here. First non-stop flight around the world took off and returned here in a plane built in factories here. The first truly intercontinental bomber, the B-36, was produced here. The B-58, which is the finest weapon system in the world today, which it demonstrated most recently in flying from Tokyo to London with an average speed of nearly 1,000 miles per hour, is a Fort Worth product. The Iroquois helicopter from Fort Worth is a mainstay in our fight against the guerrillas in South Vietnam. The transportation of crews between our missile sites is done in planes produced here in Fort Worth. So wherever the confrontation may occur, and in the last 3 years it's occurred at least three occasions, in Laos, in Berlin, and in Cuba, and it will again, wherever it occurs, the products of Fort Worth and the men of Fort Worth provide us with a sense of security. And in the not-too-distant future, a new Fort Worth product, and I'm glad that there was a table separating Mr. Hicks and myself, a new Fort Worth product. The TFX, Tactical Fighter Experimental. Nobody knows what those words mean, but that's what they mean. Tactical Fighter Experimental will serve the forces of freedom and will be the number one airplane in the world today. There's been a good deal of discussion of the long and hard-fought competition to win the TFX contract, but very little discussion about what this plane will do. It will be the first operational aircraft ever produced that can literally spread its wings through the air. It will thus give us a single plane capable of carrying out missions of speed as well as distance, able to fly very far in one form or very fast in another. It can take off from rugged, short airstrips, enormously increasing the Air Force's ability to participate in limited wars. The same basic plane will serve the Navy's carriers, saving the taxpayers at least $1 billion in cost if they built separate planes for the Navy and the Air Force. The government of Australia, by purchasing $125 million of TFX planes before they are even off the drawing boards, has already testified to the merit of this plane, and at the same time, it's confident in the ability of Fort Worth to meet its schedule. In all these ways, the success of our national defense depends upon this city in the western United States, 10,000 miles from Vietnam, 5,000 or 6,000 miles from Berlin, thousands of miles from trouble spots in Latin America and Africa or the Middle East. And yet Fort Worth and what it does and what it produces participates in all these great historic events. Texas as a whole and Fort Worth bear particular responsibility for this national defense effort. For military procurement in this state totals nearly $1.25 billion, fifth highest among all the states of the Union. There are more military personnel on active duty in this state than any in the nation, save one. And it's not Massachusetts. Any in the nation, save one, where they... with a combined military-civilian defense payroll of well over $1 billion. I don't recite these for any partisan purpose. They're the result of American determination to be second to none. And as a result of the effort which this country has made in the last 3 years, we are second to none. In the past 3 years, we have increased the defense budget of the United States by over 20%, increased the program of acquisition for Polaris submarines from 24 to 41, increased our Minuteman missile purchase program by more than 75%, doubled the number of strategic bombers and missiles on alert, doubled the number of nuclear weapons available in the strategic alert forces, increased the tactical nuclear forces deployed in Western Europe by over 60%. Added 5 combat-ready divisions to the armies of the United States and 5 tactical fighter wings to the Air Force of the United States. Increased our strategic airlift capability by 75% and increased our special counterinsurgency forces, which are engaged now in South Vietnam, by 600%. I hope those who want a strong America and place it on some signs will also place those figures next to it. This is not an easy effort. This requires sacrifice by the people of the United States. But this is a very dangerous and uncertain world. As I said earlier, on 3 occasions in the last 3 years, the United States has had a direct confrontation. No one can say when it will come again. No one expects that our life will be easy. Certainly not in this decade, and perhaps not in this century. But we should realize what a burden and responsibility the people of the United States have borne for so many years. Here, a country which lived in isolation, divided and protected by the Atlantic and the Pacific, uninterested in the struggles of the world around it. Here, in the short space of 18 years, after the Second World War, we put ourselves by our own will and by necessity into defensive alliances with countries all around the globe. Without the United States, South Vietnam would collapse overnight. Without the United States, the CETO alliance would collapse overnight. Without the United States, the CENTO alliance would collapse overnight. Without the United States, there would be no NATO, and gradually Europe would drift into neutralism and indifference. Without the effort of the United States and the Alliance for Progress, the communist advance onto the mainland of South America would long ago have taken place. So this country, which desires only to be free, which desires to be secure, which desires to live at peace for 18 years under 3 different administrations, has borne more than its share of the burden, has stood watch for more than its number of years. I don't think that we are fatigued or tired. We would like to live as we once lived, but history will not permit it. The communist balance of power is still strong. The balance of power is still on the side of freedom. We are still the keystone and the arch of freedom, and I think we will continue to do as we have done in our past, our duty, and the people of Texas will be in the lead. So I'm glad to come. I'm glad to come to this state, which has played such a significant role in so many efforts in this century, and to say that here in Fort Worth, you people will be playing a major role in the maintenance of the security of the United States for the next 10 years. I'm confident, as I look to the future, that our chances for security, our chances for peace, are better than they've been in the past. And the reason is because we're stronger. And with that strength is a determination to not only maintain the peace, but also the vital interests of the United States. to that great cause, Texas and the United States are committed. Thank you.
So the applause acknowledging the president's remarks, flashbulbs popping suddenly quiet as Mr. Buck again.
Your visit with us in Fort Worth today, the things you have said have refreshed and renewed our appreciation of your great leadership and courage. You have brought rain. to moisten our pastures and our fields. You have brought sunshine in our hearts. We know that you don't wear a hat. We couldn't let you leave Fort Worth without providing you with some protection against the rain.
The president has received the traditional Western hat. He wants to find out how you put it on, so I handed it to Mr. Buck to put on. Now, finally, he takes it back. He is teasing the crowd now with motions whether or not he's going to put on. Look, here he is.
On Monday, if you'll come up there, you'll have a chance to see it then.
Again, Mr. Buck.
That Texas hat is presented to you by Washer Brothers, one of the oldest men's stores in Texas. And to protect you against local enemies, in the manner that you are protecting this nation against our foreign enemies, and to keep the rattlesnakes on Vice President Johnson's ranch from striking you, we want to present this pair of boots.
The president is enjoying this.
We won't ask you to put them on. Here. The boots are presented by Mr. John Justin, former mayor of Fort Worth, manufacturer of the most walked-about boots in the world. Mrs. Kennedy, as you ride to the hounds or walk to the rattlesnakes, we want you to have protection, too.
Before Mrs. Kennedy gets a pair of boots, perhaps you'll wear them at the ranch. It's quite an equestrian, and it would be her first opportunity to ride a quarter horse. Again, Mr. Buck.
Before the benediction, I'd like to present Mrs. Granville Walker, the wife of Dr. Granville Walker, who will pronounce the benediction. Mrs. Granville Walker. After Dr. Walker gives the benediction, we ask that you please remain seated until the President and Mrs. Kennedy have made their exit. Dr. Granville Walker.
Let us be in the spirit of prayer. The Lord bless all nations with a desire for peace. The Lord bless our own beloved nation with rectitude and prosperity, and grant us to achieve justice for all within it. The Lord bless our president and all in places of responsibility with wisdom, and with health equal to their tasks. And now the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and be gracious unto you. The Lord cause his face to shine upon you and give you peace both now and forever. Amen.
President and Mrs. Kennedy are shaking hands with the people at the speaker's table, one at a time, and they are making their way slowly, and that's a long way down to the end of the table there. They will be leaving momentarily, and of course they will be going to Carswell Air Force Base, from there to Dallas, and we will keep our fingers crossed for a cessation for the time being, at least, of the showers. President and Mrs. Kennedy have just about completed the handshakes, the thank yous. They are smiling broadly. Sincerely, now they pause to shake hands with members of the Texas Boys Choir, and they are falling over one another to shake the President's hand and Mrs. Kennedy's hand. Both of them, beaming is the only word that can describe them, as they make their exit now through the crowd. And he pauses here and there to shake hands with the people once again. Although I'm standing on a chair here at the south end of the ballroom, it is difficult to see them because other people are climbing on the chairs out in front of me. I assume from the direction of the heads as they turn that they have just about passed through the aisle and are entering the kitchen to make their exit. People are beginning to leave, and they were requested, as you heard from Mr. Buck, to keep their places until the President and his lady made their exit. The speaker's platform is clearing now. And for just a moment, here is David Daniel, who has been gathering information reports for us and for the newsroom this morning, to give you an impression or two of his own, as he has been wandering about this place with us since 6 o'clock and before. David?
I spent some time on the Hotel Texas parking lot awaiting the arrival of President Kennedy and his party, and I was impressed with the warm reception of the crowd. Many of the people were school pupils and students who had skipped school for the day, come with their parents, and had eagerly awaited an outreached hand to touch the President as he wove through the crowd. And I thought this morning's speech on the parking lot to the great masses of Fort Worth was primarily directed to Premier Khrushchev more than anything else. He spoke of our capabilities in space, our economic potential, and our defense capability here in Fort Worth. And it seemed like a little saber rattling for the Premier's benefit. And when he announced that we would have the largest booster in the history of our nation fired next month, that really excited the crowd. And it was an expression of our expectations in space. The crowd really liked that comment.
Thank you, David, very much. And the people now are clearing the ballroom as rapidly as 2,000 people can. The President, of course, I say, will go from here to the Carswell Air Force Base. And some of the high school students who are not dismissed this morning will have an opportunity to see them. The Castleberry High School will be marching or walking, as the case may be, from the school, which is adjacent to Highway 183. And there, as I understand it, the high school band will serenade the President as he and his entourage then drive to Carswell Air Force Base. I could echo what David said earlier about the warmth of the reception of the President this morning, because this was notable, and I thought particularly on the part of people here of other political persuasions. They made that very plain themselves, as one man put it to me very succinctly when I asked him about his presence here so early in the morning. He said, "Mister, I didn't come here to vote. I came here to see the President of the United States." And he was not fortunate enough to get a ticket for the breakfast this morning, so he had taken up a vantage point and out in the rain, and was standing there patiently. As I said, I arrived at 6 o'clock. How long he had been here at that time, I don't know, but apparently he waited it out in order to see the President and to hear what he had to say. And the last of the color
and the Pageantry. That is the Eastern Hills High School Band, with their highly polished instruments and their bright uniforms, are making their exit now from the far corner of the ballroom, and it seems as though that must be a block or two away. Of course, the newsreel cameraman, the working press, are gathering up all their material and packing it away. And this is quite some job, as you can well imagine, here for the cameramen themselves. The working press, of course, only stuff their notes in their pocket, and they are off. There were some, I would estimate, around 100 or more reporters, members of the press here, in addition to the cameramen, representing the various communications media here today. Well, that just about concludes, or it does conclude the program from here now this morning, with just one thing, if I may add. Behind the speaker's table up there, just to the left of the rostrum, was this message from the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce hanging on the wall. Members of the Fort Worth Chamber of Commerce must be missionaries of progress, not just beneficiaries of the efforts of others. So we return you now to the studio.
Total Information News from WBAP Fort Worth.
Norwood McClendon reporting. President Kennedy drew prolonged applause in Fort Worth this morning when he said this country next month will fire the largest rocket booster in the world, putting us ahead of the Soviet Union in space. Later, President Kennedy told a Fort Worth breakfast audience that Texas ranks fifth among the states in prime military contract spending. He also spoke well of the TFX fighter plane contracted to General Dynamics Fort Worth. Jack Brown reports.
A crowd estimated by police at 8,000 stood outside the Hotel Texas this morning waiting to hear the president. He emerged shortly before 9 o'clock. The skies were still dripping, although no rain was falling at that time. The president shook hands with the crowd, then mounted the platform. On the platform with him, Vice President Johnson, Senator Yarborough, Governor Connally, and Congressman Jim Wright. The president was introduced by Vice President Johnson. The president touched briefly on the TFX fighter contract, praising it in his speech outside the hotel. The speech was a short one, less than 5 minutes. He drew several rounds of applause. After leaving the platform, he again shook hands with the crowd and walked back inside the hotel. Mrs. Kennedy did not appear at the open-air speech. And for a while, it looked like she would not appear at the grand ballroom of the hotel where the president just finished addressing a breakfast crowd of some 2,000 persons. Mrs. Kennedy walked in later after the other guests were introduced, and she drew a standing ovation from the crowd. The president, in his speech at the breakfast, again praised the TFX fighter contract and had some words to say about a rocket launching next month. For that story, here's David Daniel.
Mrs. Kennedy was the high attraction this morning. The president joked about his wife and said, "No one ever wonders what Lyndon and I wear." He had high praise for Representative Jim Wright and said Fort Worth's importance to the U.S. defense dates back to World War I, when he said his brother flew from Fort Worth. And he said this is the place where the first around-the-world flight started. And he said Fort Worth is the home of the B-58, the best flying system in the world today. He praised the helicopters produced from Bell and Hearst and its function in guerrilla warfare. He said in the not-too-distant future, a new Fort Worth product, the TFX, will serve forces of freedom and be the number one airplane in the world. He said a lot's been said about the long and hard, rough and tumble competition, but not very much about the capabilities of the TFX. He said producing a multi-service plane is saving taxpayers over $1 billion rather than having separate planes for the Navy and Air Force. And he said the White House is confident that Fort Worth will meet its production schedules with the TFX. And he mentioned that Texas has the highest military payroll than any other state in the Union, save one. And then he chuckled, and that's not Massachusetts.
He said Fort Worth will be playing a major role in the defense of the United States in the next 10 years. He said the outlook for world peace now is greater than it ever has been. He outlined the defense capabilities of the United States, then said, "These figures speak louder of the strength of the nation than posters," an obvious reference to arch-right wingers. After his speech, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, Raymond Buck, presented Mr. Kennedy with cowboy boots and a cowboy dress hat. The president declined to wear the hat, saying if anyone wanted to see the hat on him, they'd have to come to the White House Monday. That's one of his trademarks, not wearing a hat. And both he and Mr. Kennedy were presented alligator cowboy boots from Justin Boots, a manufacturer here in Fort Worth. That was his speech, and now his motorcade is making its way to Carswell Air Force Base, where he will board a plane for Dallas and his subsequent reception at Love Field. This is David Daniel reporting from Hotel Texas for WBAP News.
From Fort Worth, the President and Mrs. Kennedy and their party go to Dallas, where the Chief Executive addresses a luncheon gathering. Tonight they'll be in Austin. The Kennedys will meet the people again in the downtown Fort Worth, back to Carswell motorcade, as they proceed up Main to Belknap, west to Jacksboro Highway, then to River Oaks Boulevard, and on to the airbase. The party is scheduled to leave for Dallas at 11:15. The latest weather information in a moment. Now forecasting for Fort Worth and Dallas, mostly cloudy and cooler this afternoon, partly cloudy and colder tonight, fair tomorrow. Expect highest afternoon temperatures in the lower 60s, the lowest tonight in the upper 30s. Wind westerly, 15 to 20 miles per hour this afternoon, then northerly, 10 to 15 tonight. Light showers in the area this morning should end by noon. At Southwest International Airport, temperature is 57 degrees, relative humidity 83%. Norwood McClendon reporting.
Your straight line to reliable reporting, WBAP Fort Worth, where the news comes first.
A big city has been told to be on its good behavior today, and we're it. From Dallas Love Field, the Dallas-Fort Worth area broadcasters bring you a special description of the arrival of President John F. Kennedy. At this moment, three special jetliners are supposed to be in the air between Dallas and Fort Worth. They were scheduled to take off a few moments ago from Carswell Air Force Base in Fort Worth for the brief flight to Dallas. Mr. and Mrs. Kennedy and their official party began their Texas tour yesterday morning when they departed Washington. From there, they have visited Houston, San Antonio, then on to Fort Worth, where they spent last night. If time allows, we'll bring you up to date on their stops at those three previous points. But right now, the eyes of Texas and the nation are focused on Dallas. And this is the heart of a real political tempest. If you'll recall, it wasn't too many weeks ago that U.N. Ambassador Adlai Stevenson was given pretty rude treatment during a visit here. This put the spotlight on Big D, and the glare lingers. This predominantly Republican area is rather notorious for its disregard of protocol where dignitaries are concerned. And to avoid any embarrassing incidents today, the tightest possible security measures are in effect. The Secret Service has been on the quiet prowl in Dallas for many days, checking the routes of travel, the people who will be in close contact with the president, the food he will eat, the cars he rides in, everything and anything involving the security of the chief executive has been checked, rechecked, and then checked again. And those of us here in the radio, TV, and press area have undergone exhaustive security investigation. Our broadcast equipment has been examined. In short, nothing is being left to chance where the president's security and safety are concerned. We're located atop a huge broadcasting truck right near the Love Field Freight Terminal. We have an excellent view of the landing area and the dignitaries who will be greeting the president as he arrives. An area selected to afford maximum viewing for the public and fast access to the route of travel the motorcade will use into downtown Dallas. The crowd size at this moment we would estimate to be in the vicinity of 2,000. They began arriving this morning at about 9 o'clock. We saw the first sprinkling of the public easing in, but the parking lots are now jammed almost to capacity, and there are many signs in evidence. We'll tell you about those placards in a few moments. The weather had been a big concern, and as you recall, early this morning, Dallas was having a heavy rain, and it looked like a very dismal condition for greeting the president and his official party. But at approximately 9:30, the rain stopped, the wind picked up and shifted, and now there are hardly any clouds in the northern skies. The wind is now coming roughly out of the southeast, and we have a brilliant sun overhead. So weather conditions have improved considerably, but there is a heavy, gusty wind. Actually, there are three big jetliners in the air between Dallas and Fort Worth right now. Air Force number one, of course, is Mr. Kennedy's plane. Next is Vice President Lyndon Johnson's jet, and then the jet carrying other members of the official traveling party, including the White House press corps, those reporters and photographers who always travel with the president, no matter where he goes. Protocol dictates that the president's plane is the first to take off. Then comes the vice president's plane. But this protocol, as those of us who cover these events found out a long time ago, is a very strange animal. It then states that the vice president's plane lands first so he can be on hand to greet the president. The pilots have been busy in these past few days practicing takeoffs and landings from Carswell and at Love Field so the proper order of appearance can be carried out. For those of you who plan to try and catch a glimpse of the fast-moving president and first lady, here's the route of travel they're going to be covering from Love Field to the Trademark, where the president will make his luncheon speech. The motorcade departs Love Field. Then it goes Mockingbird Lane to Lemon Avenue, south on Lemon to Turtle Creek, Cedar Springs, then through the downtown area on Harwood to Main. The main route of travel will be west on Main to Houston, then through the Triple Underpass to Stemmons Freeway, and on to the Trademark. The return to Love Field will be the quickest possible route after the luncheon, Harry Hines to Mockingbird, and then here to the airport. Returning to the security aspects of this operation, and one big jet has just come in, another is now approaching from the south. But on these security features, the special car for the president has been flown in from Washington. It's sitting directly below us right now. It's the huge plastic bubble-top limousine that affords the president maximum protection from the weather and yet allows the public to see him. However, since the weather has cleared, the bubble top has been removed, and the president will be riding in the open. That car was flown in here last night from Washington, and the big Air Force transport that brought it is now directly across the field from us. Here comes the second of the official jets. We can't determine from here whether that is Air Force One or the vice president's plane. We will know shortly. It's now making its rather bumpy run down the runway. At this time, we see another jet to the south coming in. Perhaps that is the presidential plane. Dallas Police Chief Jesse Curry has told the citizens and visitors that nothing must occur that will be disrespectful or degrading to the president. Now, we see in brilliant evidence right now a Texas flag and a huge Confederate flag flying. Most of the smaller signs are hooray for JFK, then JFK and LBJ in 64, and we're with you all the way. But there are those opposition signs, one reading, Help Kennedy Stamp Out Democracy. Now, the officials are not going to concern themselves any real deep worry just about the display of these banners, but any untoward motion that might be made toward the official presidential party, well, we'll describe that for you if we're within viewing range. The chief of police, incidentally, who stands right below us, has in effect deputized citizens who see any incidents brewing to take action to put them down. Hundreds of additional policemen are on hand. The motorcade route is closely watched, carefully plotted and planned. It's our hope that the only noteworthy event today will be Mr. Kennedy's arrival, the speech, the weather, and his departure. In the crowds, all of these placards, as we have described, many of them really too small to read from the distance where we stand right now. The first big jet to come in is unloading the White House press corps. There are chartered buses parked alongside the Red Concourse terminal, and these buses will take them along the official route of the motorcade and then on to the Trademark. The official greeting party is on hand. Mayor and Mrs. Earl Cabell and Dr. Lloyd V. Berkner and County Judge Lou Sterrett and Mr. Eric Johnson. There are many in the official greeting party, and they're five big, shiny black limousines are parked directly behind this huge van from where we enjoy our vantage point at this time.
It looks like a police convention. We have never seen as many Dallas police officers in one location in all of our years of covering Dallas news, but they are here in great profusion. Actually, Love Field has not been closed down completely. There has been a delay on the arrival and departure of planes, stacking them up here until the presidential party can be cleared. The first of the two big official jets is now taxiing just below us, and here comes Air Force Number One, the president's plane, now touching down. Its wheels are down, and the president and Mrs. Kennedy have arrived at Dallas Love Field. The plane bearing Vice President and Mrs. Johnson is now taxiing. You can certainly hear it in the background. It is taxiing directly in front of us at this moment. We're within a stone's throw of the Vice President's plane. And Air Force Number One, the presidential plane, has now dropped its flaps. It's coming to a halt on the north-south runway and will soon be here at the unloading area. Parking of these giant jets has been somewhat of a problem. They want to afford maximum clearance for the three official party planes. There have been reports that Mr. Kennedy would perhaps make some remarks while here at Love Field, but a check less than an hour ago with the officials indicates he will not. The official greeting party is consisting of the Vice President and Mrs. Johnson, of course, the mayor, and many other of the county and state officials. Still no sign of any unloading from the vice presidential plane. They're wheeling the big loading ramps up at this moment. This has been billed as a non-political tour, but as one courthouse sage put it just the other day, how non-political can you be if you're the president? From the Democratic standpoint, the entire state is in a condition of upheaval right now, and it boils down to a matter of liberal versus conservative within the party itself. Mr. Kennedy made some mention of that last night in Houston when he took a verbal swipe at the warring factions of the party. And now the vice president's party is deplaning. They are coming down the loading stairs. We have counted 12 people leaving to this moment. No sign yet of the vice president and Mrs. Johnson. In the case of this Dallas luncheon, which they all will be hurrying to, senior Democratic Senator Ralph Yarborough was for a time left off the list of names at the head table. It is our understanding, however, that all of that was cleared up and that he is aboard the vice president's plane. A plane landed here at Love Field earlier this week bearing almost 5,000 roses from California and the huge bouquets to be presented to Mrs. Johnson. Just now they have been presented to her as we see her coming down the stairs, and the one to be presented to the First Lady were carried out just at the base of our van here only a moment ago. And here comes the presidential plane, Air Force Number One, now taxiing down the taxi strip. It will be parking up even closer to us than did the vice president's plane. Those flowers, a brilliant yellow rose bouquet given to Mrs. Johnson, who is now walking over to the automobile loading area. And the flowers to be given to the First Lady are long-stemmed red roses. And a beautiful bouquet they are. The security precautions at this luncheon they're going to attend range from the distance from the president's car door to the trademark entrance and to how many doors and windows are in the building, and even the method of selecting the steak the president will eat. Now, most of these stations will be broadcasting the president's speech from the trademark in just a few moments, so we urge you to stay tuned for our live and special pickup from that location. And here is the presidential jet, U.S. Air Force Number One, printed on the side. And it is right in front of us at this moment. We're going to have an excellent view of the President and the First Lady as they step off this jet. And already, Love Field traffic has resumed as those planes that had stacked up waiting are now taking off. And the crowd begins its cheer, which you can't hear over the whistle and hum of the jets. But handkerchiefs are being waved, the placards are being held high, and hundreds of tiny American flags are now being waved toward the presidential jet. The doors fly open and the loading ladders are being wheeled into place. This is a split-second timed operation for the Secret Service and the Air Force and the Signal Corps. Nothing left to chance. Every possible precaution has been taken. And now, the President and First Lady will be departing in just a moment. Vice President and Mrs. Johnson are stepping to the foot of the ladder, two members of the Special Air Force Honor Guard who accompany the president on these flights have stepped to the foot of the ladder. They are standing at rigid attention. The reception line is formed, and there is Mrs. Kennedy, the First Lady, stepping from the plane, wearing a bright pink suit with a dark fur collar and a matching pink hat, and the president, wearing a dark suit, steps off directly behind. Then comes Governor and Mrs. John Connolly and Senator Ralph Yarborough. He rode the presidential plane rather than the vice presidential plane. The usual handshakes, the official greetings. Mrs. Kennedy has been presented her bouquet of brilliant red roses, and they make a lovely contrast to the bright pink suit she is wearing. For the ladies in the audience, once again, it's a bright pink suit. She is wearing black shoes, a black fur collar, and a pink pillbox hat. And that is just about the extent of our ability to explain what any lady is wearing, but she does make a very striking picture as she clutches the huge bouquet of bright red roses. The handshake line is long, but already the official party has performed its greeting. The president has stopped momentarily to chat with someone whom we can't recognize from this distance because so many people are crowded around that particular area. But in a very few moments, they will be stepping into the official limousine, and then this fast ride through the downtown area to the trademark where the luncheon will be held. The weather couldn't be better. We have a brilliant sun at this moment. The wind has diminished considerably, and it has turned into a comfortable situation for the hundreds of people who came here to Dallas Love Field to witness the arrival of the president and his first lady. The official police guard is now forming. The motorcade will be led by some 30 motorcycle-born policemen whom we have seen here throughout the morning as all of this police corps has assembled. The normal Love Field jet and regular plane traffic has resumed. There is a jam-up at this moment outside the official automobile. The president has not yet made his way into the limousine. The First Lady is directly behind him. He is now being escorted to the limousine. The crowd is being pushed back. Now, when we say crowd, we do not mean the public. These are the photographers and those in the official greeting party, because the public is contained behind the usual Love Field chain-link fences that are keeping them from spilling in to the presidential reception area. Now we see the other official members of the greeting party, Dr. Berkner, Mayor and Mrs. Cabell, Mr. Eric Johnston, Judge Lou Sterrett. They're now walking over here. They will have to come through a gate directly in front of our vantage point in order to find their way into the limousines that are waiting to take them in this motorcade. The presidential car is now occupied. They're clearing the photographers and the other bystanders out of the way, and in just a moment, it will be coming almost directly below us and forming in this motorcade. We will be able to give you a more accurate description of the President and First Lady as they pass here. Now, those of you who are waiting along the parade route, just to be sure that you find yourself in the proper location, let's give it to you once again. The party is now ready to depart Love Field. It will go Mockingbird Lane to Lemon Avenue, then travel south on Lemon to Turtle Creek, Cedar Springs, through the downtown area on Harwood to Main, west on Main to Houston, through the Triple Underpass to Stemmons Freeway, then on to the Trademark. And the return to Love Field will be much faster. They will simply go out Harry Hines Boulevard to Mockingbird and then here to the airport. Departure time from the airport is scheduled for approximately 2:30. And another reminder, those of you who will be wanting to hear the president's address at the Trademark, most of these stations in this special Dallas-Fort Worth area broadcaster's coverage will be carrying the president's address live in just a very few moments, and you will be able to hear his remarks there. Other of the stations will be broadcasting highlight excerpts of the president's speech throughout the afternoon and evening. The press, radio, and TV corps covering this event today is huge. There are literally hundreds of reporters on hand, including those of the special White House press corps who always accompany the president. And now, the president's special limousine has begun to move slowly forward. Police Chief Jesse Curry and Dallas County Sheriff Bill Decker are directly in front of this car, Chief Curry driving his own personal car to lead the way for this motorcade. The president's car is being delayed momentarily. We can't see from here exactly what is holding it up. Yes, we can, too. He has now decided to shake hands with one or two more people, and that is the cause for the delay. But this is the moment where the Secret Service has its point of tension. As we have talked with many of these Secret Service men in the past few days who've arranged for the president's security, they say when the president stops moving, that's when we're concerned, because that is when the possibility of trouble comes to the forefront. And here comes the president now. In fact, he's not in his limousine. He's departed the limousine, and he is walking. He is reaching across the fence, shaking hands with many of the people who have come here to see him. He is closely accompanied by Dallas police officers and, of course, the Secret Service. But Mr. Kennedy stepped out of the automobile. He is now shaking hands. Mrs. Kennedy is right behind him, and they are walking along the line of the fence, shaking hands with some of the hundreds of people who have come here to view their arrival. Now, this is a distinct departure from the plan that had been set forth many, many days ago. And now here's Mrs. Lyndon Johnson. She also is going along. So is the vice president. They're making their way along the line of the fence and still are not in the official limousine. The only members of the official party in the presidential limousine who didn't depart are Governor and Mrs. Connolly. They have stayed in the limousine. But the president, the first lady, the vice president, and Mrs. Lyndon Johnson all are walking along the edge of this fence, shaking hands with the crowd. And they are being greeted by placards of varying emotion and political feeling. Those saying, "We're with you all the way, JFK," and those saying, "Help JFK stamp out democracy." So he is seeing Dallas County politics at the height of a very boiling moment in Dallas political history. Thousands of children now swarming, trying to get over the fence, the Dallas police trying to keep them back, and the security is tense at this time, but is going beautifully. Vice President and Mrs. Johnson are, some 25 to 30 feet behind the President and the First Lady in the handshaking tour, the unofficial, unscheduled handshaking tour. And now, the President and First Lady are retreating from the fence. They're heading now for the official limousine, where Governor Connolly stands, waiting their arrival so that they can make their way downtown and out to the trademark. But this was one of those impromptu moments for which President Kennedy is so well known. So many times you have heard that the Secret Service men suddenly find themselves without the president, that suddenly he has left them and stepped into the crowd, the milling throng, and decided to shake hands and give his personal greetings. And this, once again, he did. So you could say perhaps that this is more the norm now than the unexpected, because it has been done so many times. And the gunmetal gray limousine, blue and gray, pulling away now from the fenced area. The president and Mrs. Kennedy seated on the back seat, Governor and Mrs. Connolly on the second seats or jump seats, and then the official driver and Secret Service men are in the front seat. And immediately behind them, another car swarming with the Secret Service. Car making its way through the rain puddles left by this early morning rain, and all of the other vehicles in the official motorcade are now falling into line, and the trip to downtown Dallas and the trademark is underway. Another group of spectators lining a parking lot area. The presidential car has slowed down so that they may see and that he may wave to them. But now the motorcycle escort, a flying wedge of some one dozen Dallas police motorcycles, leading the way, and the pace is picking up as they head for the departure gate and the trip downtown to the trademark. This has been a special broadcast of the arrival of the official presidential party. President and Mrs. Kennedy, Vice President and Mrs. Lyndon Johnson, and other members of the official party, as they arrive in Dallas today, where they will attend a luncheon and the president will make an address. They will depart here at 2:30 for Bergstrom Air Force Base at Austin, then will be overnight guests at the LBJ Ranch, and then they will, unofficially, our schedule says they will depart at noon tomorrow for Washington. So the party is now leaving Dallas Love Field, and the spectators are scrambling. It looks like bargain day right after Christmas, as thousands of people dash madly to get another view of the president as he and his first lady depart Love Field. The special broadcast, a pool effort on the part of the Dallas-Fort Worth area broadcasters. We have been speaking from atop a huge broadcasting van where we hope we've given you somewhat of a word picture of what has occurred here today.
The speech of President Kennedy at the Dallas Trademark will be broadcast by 570 Radio. Stay tuned for the president's Dallas speech at the Trademark on 570 Radio. This is WBAP 570 Fort Worth. Our time now, 6 minutes before 12 noon.
More on that bulletin. From WBAP Newsroom, President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left downtown Dallas. Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed Mr. Kennedy. She cried, "Oh, no." The motorcade sped on. Associated Press photographer James W. Algins said he saw blood on the president's head. Algins said he heard two shots but thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president. Algins said he saw no one with a gun. Here is a tape report from Dallas.
It's not known for sure, but it is believed that President Kennedy has been shot. President Kennedy was in a motorcade en route to the Trademark, where he was to address a luncheon gathering shortly after noon today. As I say, it has not been fully confirmed, but police radios are carrying that the president has been hit. The president's party, his wife, the governor, senators, and all other political officials were en route as fast as they could get there to Parkland Hospital under heavy police siren, guard going extremely fast past the Trademark, past the large throngs of people awaiting to catch a glimpse of the president. It's thought that the incident occurred near the underpass section entering the Stemmons Expressway just on the outskirts of downtown Dallas. This unit is presently en route to Parkland Hospital. Confirmation will come shortly. From Dallas, Bob Welch, WBAP Radio News.
Stay tuned to the station for further developments on the unconfirmed report that President Kennedy may have been shot in Dallas. Here is a bulletin from Associated Press and the WBAP Newsroom. President Kennedy has been reported taken to Parkland Hospital in Dallas. That's near the Dallas Trademark, where he was scheduled to make a speech. We are standing by awaiting further developments on the unconfirmed report that President Kennedy may have been shot in Dallas. Stay tuned to WBAP 820 for the latest on this tragic event. Stay tuned to WBAP 824 for further developments
in the unconfirmed report that President Kennedy may have been shot in Dallas. Stay tuned to WBAP for further developments on the report that President Kennedy has been shot in Dallas. The condition of the president is not known at this time. As we receive that information in WBAP newsroom, we'll convey it on to you immediately. Please do not call WBAP switchboard. Stay tuned for further details on the report that President Kennedy may have been shot in Dallas. In just a few moments, we'll join Dallas for a direct report.
We are just as quiet as if the president had not been involved in any ruckus. And, of course, the reports that he was are unconfirmed. However, the president has not arrived here. A group of Secret Service men and other officials is gathered where the president normally would enter and discussing heatedly with one another some subject or other. Of course, we have no idea what. A large press delegation here at the trademark suddenly rushed out of the building after the first report that the president had been shot. This unconfirmed report emptied the hall of many newsmen. However, most persons who are at the tables dining are not aware that anything has happened and just think the president is late on his route to the trademark. They are continuing their luncheon and, for the most part, have no knowledge that anything has happened.
We have a further bulletin from WBAP Newsroom. Here's Norwood McClendon.
The Associated Press reports from Dallas that President Kennedy was shot today just as his motorcade left the downtown section. Mrs. Kennedy is said to have jumped up and grabbed her husband and cried, "Oh, no," and the motorcade sped on. Photographer J.W. Altkins of the Associated Press said that he saw blood on the president's head. The photographer said he heard two shots but thought someone was shooting fireworks until he saw the blood on the president. He said he saw no one with a gun. Jack Bell of the AP asked Kenneth O'Donnell, presidential assistant, if Mr. Kennedy was dead. O'Donnell gave no answer. The president was reported taken to Parkland Hospital near the Dallas Trade Mart, where he was to have made a speech. Bell said Mr. Kennedy was transferred to an ambulance. He lay on a seat of the ambulance. Blood stained his clothing. Bell of the Associated Press says that three shots were fired as the motorcade entered the triple underpass, which leads to the Stemmons Freeway route to Parkland Hospital. Pandemonium broke loose around the scene. The Secret Service waved the motorcade on at top speed to the hospital. Even at high speed, the AP says, it took nearly 5 minutes to get the car to the ambulance entrance of the hospital. Newsmen say they saw President Kennedy lying flat on his face on the seat of his car. Bell said a man and a woman were scrambling on the upper level of a walkway overlooking the underpass. Presidential aide Lawrence O'Brien said he had no information on whether or not the president still was alive. Mrs. Kennedy is said to have been weeping and trying to hold up her husband's head when reporters reached the car. That's the latest from the Associated Press in Dallas. Stay tuned to this station for later news.
Here's a further bulletin from WBAP News. David Daniel reporting.
Representative Albert Thomas of Texas, of Houston, says he has been informed that both President Kennedy and Governor John Connally of Texas are still alive. Earlier reports said that the president was shot as his motorcade was moving along the outskirts of Dallas. A presidential aide, Lawrence O'Brien, says he has no information on whether the president is alive. This later report says he is still alive. Texas Governor John Connally also was shot. It isn't known yet whether he is still alive. However, this late report from Albert Thomas says he believes both are alive. When the president was shot, Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed him. She cried, "Oh, no." The Secret Service ordered the motorcade to speed on to the nearby Parkland Hospital. Associated Press reporter Jack Bell says the president and Connally were shot as the motorcade entered a triple underpass which leads to the Stemmons Freeway. Bell said a man and a woman were scrambling on the upper level of a walkway overlooking the underpass. Mrs. Kennedy was weaving and trying to haul up her husband's head when reporters reached the car.
Stay tuned now for NBC News on the Hour. This is WBAP 820 in Fort Worth. We'll keep you up to date on the latest developments on this news story. The time is 1 o'clock.
This is NBC News. Here is Peter Hackis in Washington.
President Kennedy has been shot. As of now, there is no final official report on his condition. Here now, pieced together, the news items we have as they have reached us from Dallas, Texas. Within the hour, President Kennedy and Texas Governor John B. Connally were cut down by would-be assassins' bullets as they toured downtown Dallas in an open automobile. Representative Albert Thomas, Democrat of Texas, says he's been informed the President and Governor Connally were both still alive after having been shot in an assassination attempt. Thomas, standing outside the corridor of the emergency room in which both Mr. Kennedy and Connally were under treatment, said he's been told the President was still alive, but in very critical condition. The President, his limp body cradled in the arms of his wife, was rushed to Parkland Hospital. The governor also taken to Parkland.
Here's a further bulletin from WBAP News.
From Dallas?
That's right.
And did you see the shooting, miss?
Yes, sir.
Can you describe what happened?
Yes, sir.
Will you do that now?
They were driving along, and we were the only people in this area on our side, and the shots came from directly across the street from us. And just as the president's car became directly even with us, we took one look at him, and he was sitting there. He and Jackie were looking at a dog that was in the middle of the seat, and about that time, two shots rang out just as he looked up. Just as the president looked up, and these two shots rang out, and he grabbed his chest, and it looked like he was in pain, and he fell over in his seat, and Jackie fell over on him and said, "My God, he's been shot." After that, more shots rang out, and the car sped away.
Now, what kind of car was that?
What kind of a car was it? The president.
Well, I mean, where did the shots come from?
The shots came from the hill.
From the hill?
Yes. It was just east of the underpass.
Uh-huh. And,
We were on the south side.
Could you see, did you look up there where the shots came from, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
Could you see anyone?
I thought I saw this man running, but I looked at the president, and, you know, for a while, and I looked up there, and I thought I saw a man running. And so, right after that, I guess I didn't have any better sense. I started running up there, too.
Uh-huh. And what is your name?
Jean Hill.
G-E-A-N?
J-E-A-N.
J-E-A-N. And what's your address, Miss Hill?
9402 Bluff Creek.
9402 Bluff
Creek.
Creek.
Uh-huh.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Here again is Tom Whalen with further reports on this story.
At last reports, U.S. Representative Albert Thomas, who is with the Kennedy Party, Albert Thomas of Houston, said both men, both John Connally and President Kennedy, shot but were still alive at the emergency room at Parkland Hospital in Dallas. Thomas said he was informed that both Kennedy and Connally were shot in the assassination attempt. At first, it was believed that just the president was wounded. Thomas, standing outside the corridor of the emergency room at Parkland, in which both Connally and Kennedy are under treatment, said he had been told the president was still alive, but in very critical condition. Stay tuned to WBAP News for further details.
Now we rejoin NBC News in progress.
A man in the window of a building overlooking the parade route with a gun in his hand. President Kennedy is now in the Parkland Memorial Hospital. An accurate estimate of his condition has not been given. Congressman Yarbrough of Texas says only that the president is seriously wounded. This is Robert McNeil, NBC News, at the Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas, Texas.
The Secret Service says the president remained in the emergency room. The governor has been moved to the general operating room of Parkland Hospital in Dallas. One Secret Service man was overheard telling another, there is no need to move the president because emergency facilities are entirely adequate in the emergency room. Two Roman Catholic priests have been summoned to the emergency room where the president is, one identified as a Father Huber. Again, the president and the governor of Texas have been shot, both in critical condition in Dallas, Texas. Peter Hackus, NBC News, Washington.
This is WBAP 820 in Fort Worth. Stay tuned for all of the latest news on the shooting of President Kennedy and Governor Connally. It's 6 minutes past 1 o'clock.
Total information news from WBAP Fort Worth.
Tom Whalen reporting. As you've heard on WBAP for the past half hour, President Kennedy has been shot. He was shot as his motorcade was moving along the outskirts of Dallas. A presidential aide, Lawrence O'Brien, says he has no information on whether or not the president is alive. Governor Connally of Texas was also shot. At last reports, we had them both alive in the emergency room at Parkland Hospital. When the president was shot, Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed him. She cried, "Oh, no." The Secret Service ordered the motorcade then to speed on to Parkland Hospital, not far away. Associated Press reporter Jack Bell says the president and Connally were shot as the motorcade entered a triple underpass which leads to the Stemmons Freeway. Bell said a man and a woman were scrambling on the upper level of a walkway overlooking the underpass. Mrs. Kennedy was weeping and trying to hold up her husband's head when reporters reached the car. The president apparently was shot in the head. He fell face down in the back seat of the car. Blood was on his head. Governor Connally remained half-seated, slumped to the left. There was blood on the governor's face and forehead. In Washington, the White House said it had no information beyond the reports of newsmen at the scene. Both the president and Connally were rushed to Parkland Hospital near the Dallas Trademark, where the president was to have made a speech at 1 o'clock. Even at high speed, it took about 5 minutes to get the car to the ambulance entrance of the hospital. Representative Albert Thomas of Houston said a few minutes ago that both the governor, Connally, and the president were alive. The Secret Service said the president remained in the emergency room and that the governor was moved to the general operating room of Parkland Hospital. One Secret Service man was overheard telling another that there was no need to move the president because emergency facilities were adequate in the emergency room. Two Roman Catholic priests were summoned to the emergency room where the president lay. One was identified as a Father Neuber. Here is more on it.
Tom, I've got something.
Here's David Daniel now with a later report. David?
Dallas newsman James Darnell just called saying that Dallas County Sheriff's Office has arrested a neatly dressed young man in his early 20s for the attempted assassination of President Kennedy. He explicitly denies the shooting and says he has witnesses to prove it. They are moving him to the Sheriff's Office now. A neatly dressed young man in his 20s is being held as a suspect in the presidential assassination attempt.
That was David Daniel with a late bulletin on it. WBAP ran a tape a few minutes ago, which you may have heard, where a Mrs. Jane Hill, who was nearby, said she heard the shots and described how the president and Governor Connally slumped in the car after they apparently were hit by those particular bullets. She also said there was more gunfire after that. I asked her just where the shots came from, and she said they came from a nearby hill across the way. I'll be back with the latest weather information and more news in a moment.
Now you have complete news coverage of Arlington, Euless, Haltom, Hearst, Richland Hills, and the Mansfield area in the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. With the establishment of the new Mid-Cities Bureau, you'll get even more coverage in the Star-Telegram. Call in your own news, place classified ads, subscribe, or call for information. Dial Crestview 4-2555 or go by 601 West Main in Arlington. Here again, Tom Whalen.
We have no more details on the Kennedy and Connally shooting except at last reports, both Governor Connally and President Kennedy, both wounded but still alive, the president said to be extremely critical at Parkland Hospital. Now the weather forecast for the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Cloudy and cooler this afternoon, cloudy and colder tonight.
fair Saturday. High both afternoons in the lower 60s, low tonight in the upper 30s. Winds westerly 15 to 20 miles an hour this afternoon, becoming northerly 10 to 15 miles an hour tonight. Light showers this morning, and they are supposed to end in most areas by this afternoon. At the present time at Southwest International Airport, the relative humidity 32%, the temperature 74 degrees. Tom Whalen reporting.
Your straight line to reliable reporting, WBAP Fort Worth, where the news comes first.
We will dispense with our regular programming in order to bring you all the late news. At this time, we join NBC.
This is NBC News. Now here is Edwin Newman, NBC.
The latest word on President Kennedy's condition comes from Representative Albert Thomas of Texas. He says he's been informed that Mr. Kennedy is still alive, but in very critical condition. Two Roman Catholic priests have been summoned to the room where Mr. Kennedy is lying. Here is a bulletin just in. President Kennedy has been given blood transfusions at Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. That is where he is lying. This is an effort to save his life. The president is at Parkland Hospital after the assassination attempt against him and Governor John Connally of Texas. The president was shot in the head. Governor Connally was shot in the chest. He has been taken to the operating room. The president remains in the room to which he was originally taken because emergency facilities there are said to be completely adequate. To repeat, the president remains in the emergency room at the Parkland Hospital in Dallas because emergency facilities in that room are considered to be perfectly adequate. The president has been given blood transfusions in an attempt to save his life. Two Roman Catholic priests have been summoned to that emergency room. A White House spokesman said someone had asked for the priests. We have not yet been told who sent for them. To recapitulate the day's events, a sniper shot President Kennedy and also Governor John Connally of Texas, with whom the president was riding as they drove through downtown Dallas today. Mr. Kennedy apparently was shot in the head, and he fell face down in the back seat of his car. It was an open car. Blood was on his head. Mrs. Kennedy was by his side. She was not hurt. She was heard to cry, "Oh, no," and she tried to hold up the president's head. Governor Connally remained half-seated, slumped to the left. There was blood on his face and forehead. There was also blood on his chest. The president and the governor were then rushed to the Parkland Hospital near the Trade Mart in Dallas, Texas. The president was to speak at the Dallas Trade Mart in the course of his 3-day visit to Texas. Today was the second day. Blood was spattered all over the limousine, which had been flown in especially to carry the president in the Dallas welcoming parade. Secret Service men at once drew their weapons, but it was too late to prevent the damage that had been done. I repeat, the president is still alive, but he is said by Representative Albert Thomas of Texas, one of his hosts in Dallas, to be in very critical condition. The corridors of the hospital are described by those who were there as in pandemonium. At the height of the drama in the emergency room where the president is lying, a weeping Negro woman bearing a small, bloody child rushed into the hospital. A nurse and an intern went quickly to her side. Mrs. Kennedy, as I have said before, is safe, but she is stunned by what has happened. Mrs. Connally also appears to be safe. She is stunned also. We will, of course, continue with our news bulletins moment by moment as they come to us. We now join the facilities of NBC Television for a simultaneous broadcast. NBC correspondent Bill Ryan is speaking.
Window of a building about a block away from the cars. There are other reports that a man was seen with a high-powered rifle. There is no indication yet that whoever fired the shots at the president and the Texas governor has been found. The word from Parkland Memorial Hospital is that President Kennedy is being treated in an emergency room of the hospital, that he has received blood transfusions, that he is in critical condition but alive. There is no word on how many times he was struck by bullets or where he sustained the wounds. Now, we are going to attempt once more to return to station WBAP-TV, Fort Worth, Dallas, and newsman Charles Murphy.
There is no definite word yet that the person who fired the shots at President Kennedy and Governor Connally in Dallas has been apprehended. We have just received this report, though. Moments ago, authorities took a young man into custody. They took him to the county sheriff's office near the Triple Overpass, near where the shooting occurred. The man was neatly dressed. He's in his early 20s. He is protesting vehemently his innocence, and he says that he has witnesses to prove that he is innocent. Two Roman Catholic priests have been summoned to the emergency room where the president is. A White House spokesman said someone had asked for the priest, but did not say whom. Blood transfusions have been administered to President Kennedy. Governor Connally has been moved to the general operating room. Repeating, just moments ago, authorities have taken a young man into custody in Dallas, but there is no definite word that this is the person who might have fired the shots at President Kennedy and Governor Connally. Charles Murphy reporting from WBAP-TV, Fort Worth, Dallas.
These additional details from the hospital in Dallas. Officials at the hospital say the president has been given a transfusion of B-positive blood. They are calling for fresh blood of that type to have it ready if additional transfusions were needed. Mrs. Lyndon Johnson, the wife of the vice president, was escorted by Secret Service agents into the emergency room where the president is being treated. Now for Washington reaction to this tragic story, we go to NBC News Washington and David Brinkley.
Bill, there isn't a great deal as yet because obviously the news has just got here. It was taken to Congress, which of course recessed immediately to wait to see what has happened. We've checked with the White House, which has told us it doesn't know any more than we know and in fact has been listening to us to see what it could find out. The president's brother, Edward Kennedy, Teddy Kennedy, was on the floor of the Senate and was informed of the news by the Senate Democratic leader, Senator Mike Mansfield. The only word beyond that we have is that Senator Kennedy didn't know at the moment whether he would go to Texas or not. Beyond that, again, there is no particular or unexpected reaction here yet because most of Washington has just found out about it and is shocked and stunned along with everyone else. The White House, again, has no more information at the moment than we have. We'll stay here, of course, ready to bring you any at the moment it arrives. In the meantime, we'll switch back to you, Chet, Frank, Bill.
This is NBC News with the last-minute word on President Kennedy's condition. For that, we switch to Alan Bickley, station WFAA in Dallas.
President Kennedy has been shot during his tour of the city of Dallas, Texas. A presidential aide, Larry O'Brien, said he had no information on whether the president is alive, but later reports indicate from Parkland Hospital in Dallas that the president is alive, although said to be critical. This is an unconfirmed report that the president is critical. Texas Governor John Connally also was shot, has been taken to surgery in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, Texas. When the president was shot, Mrs. Kennedy jumped up and grabbed him, crying, "Oh, no." Then the Secret Service ordered the motorcade to speed on to the hospital. Apparently, from witnesses at the scene, we can deduce that the attempted assassination was committed by a slender white young man, about 30 years of age, probably from the vicinity of the Texas Book Depository building in downtown Dallas. Police and Secret Service men have now cordoned off that building. The center of downtown Dallas is in a virtual state of siege. They are combing the floors of the Texas Book Depository building in an effort to find the suspected assassin. This is Alan Bickley reporting for NBC News.
There has been an unconfirmed report, and I stress an unconfirmed report, that Vice President Lyndon Johnson was slightly wounded during the attempt on President Kennedy. One spectator said he saw Vice President Johnson walk into the hospital holding his arm. That is the first word we've had on that, and we have no official indication that Vice President Johnson has been hurt. To repeat, the latest word we have is that President Kennedy is still alive, but in critical, very critical condition. That word comes from Representative Albert Thomas of Texas, who has been one of the president's hosts during his intended 3-day visit to Texas. The president is in the emergency room. He has had blood transfusions. More blood of that particular type has been called for by the hospital. It is B-positive blood drawn from the hospital bank. Fresh blood has been called for by the doctors to have it ready if additional transfusions are needed. Governor John Connally of Texas, who was riding with the president and was wounded at the same time that the president was, has been taken to the operating room. Mr. Kennedy continues to be in the emergency room. Facilities there are said to be adequate. We will be back with additional information as soon as we receive it. This is Edwin Newman, NBC News. I beg your pardon, I'm told to continue because there is a bit more information. At the hospital in Dallas, police have been quickly posted in the corridors leading to the emergency room. Secret Service agents are on duty and have turned reporters away 40 feet from the door of the emergency room where the president is lying critically ill. Now, for reaction here in New York to the news of the assassination attempt against President Kennedy, who is in critical condition in Dallas, Texas, we switch to Joseph Michaels at the Stock Exchange in Wall Street.
The Stock Exchange itself has just suspended trading. A Board of Governors meeting was called by Keith Funston immediately after the terrible news was received, and the decision after the market was running slow and it tumbled about 2.5 points, 12 minutes behind on the ticker, with many issues suspending immediately, was that the market itself should suspend. I'm down here at Wall Street. There are lots of people here. Perhaps we can talk to some of them. Excuse me, but did you hear the news, sir?
Not quite. I couldn't hear. I was standing all the way out here.
How about you?
I didn't hear anything. I just came up.
Did you know what happened?
Yes, I did. How do you feel about it?
I don't know. A shot.
Very bad. Very.
For a further bulletin, here is David Daniel, WBAP News.
There was an unconfirmed report that Vice President Johnson had been wounded slightly. One spectator said he saw Johnson walk into the hospital holding his arms. Now back to NBC.
This boat is in critical condition, huh?
So we hear, Tom. Do you think this will have any serious effect on the market, sir?
On what?
On the market.
I doubt it.
Why?
Well, I'd have to think. I doubt very seriously.
The general condition of people here was that the ones that we've talked to so far was that this is an awful thing.
This is Edwin Newman, NBC News in New York. We have an interview with an eyewitness to the shooting of President Kennedy in Dallas. I must repeat now, the president is still alive, but is described as being in very critical condition in the hospital in Dallas. He has been given blood transfusions. Two Roman Catholic priests have been summoned to the emergency room in the hospital where the president is lying. Now, we're going to let you hear an interview with an eyewitness to the shooting that took place in Dallas a short time ago.
What is your name, ma'am?
Jane Hill.
From Dallas?
That's right.
And did you see the shooting, miss?
Yes, sir.
Can you describe what happened?
Yes, sir.
Will you do that now?
They were driving along, and we were the only people in this area on our side, and the shots came from directly across the street from us. And just as the president's car became directly even with us, we took one look at him, and he was sitting there. He and Jackie were looking at a dog that was in the middle of the seat, and about that time, two shots rang out just as he looked up. Just as the president looked up, and these two shots rang out, and he grabbed his chest, and it looked like he was in pain, and he fell over in the seat, and Jackie fell over on him and said, "My God, he's been shot." After that, more shots rang out, and the car sped away.
Now, what kind of car was that?
What kind of a car was it? The president's
car. Well, no, I mean, where did the shots come from?
The shots came from the hill.
From the hill?
Yes. It was just east of the underpass.
Uh-huh. And,
we were on the south side.
Did you look up there where the shots came from, ma'am?
Yes, sir.
Could you see anyone?
I thought I saw this man running, but I looked at the president, and, you know, for a while, and I looked up there, and I thought I saw a man running. And so, right after that, I guess I didn't have any better sense. I started running up there, too.
Uh-huh. And what is your name?
Jane Hill.
G-A-N?
J-E-I-N.
J-A-N. What's your address, Miss Hill?
9402 Bluff Creek.
9402 Bluff.
This is the NBC newsroom in New York with the latest news about the assassination attempt on President Kennedy. The president is in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, where an attempted assassination against him was executed about an hour ago. The president is in very critical condition. He apparently was shot in the head. Mr. Kennedy has had blood transfusions. Two Roman Catholic priests were called to the emergency room where he is lying. We do not know who called them there. Governor John Connally, who was in the car with the president, also was shot. He has been taken to the operating room in the hospital. An assistant to Governor Connally said he asked him how it happened, and the governor replied, "I don't know. I guess from the back they got the president, too." The governor was shot just below the shoulder blade in the back. There had been a report that Vice President Lyndon Johnson was slightly wounded. We now hear from Mrs. Lyndon Johnson, the vice president's wife, that the vice president is fine. Asked whether her husband had been wounded, she shook her head negatively. Mrs. Kennedy was riding with the president when he was wounded. She cried, "Oh no," as she saw him shot and cushioned his head as he fell. Now, for the latest details, we switch live to station WFAA in Dallas. This is the NBC newsroom in New York. We try again to get the latest details from station WFAA in Dallas.
Here is David Daniel reporting from the WBAP newsroom.
Houston Police Chief H. McGill reported today three telephone threats were made against the life of President Kennedy before the president's arrival in Houston yesterday. He has said, "We attribute these things to pranks, but it always scares us to death." He said, "I really never stopped shaking the whole time he was here." During the motorcade, a small boy threw a bag of popcorn at the presidential car in Houston, the chief said. He said it scared him simply silly. Then Mrs. Lyndon Johnson said after a visit to the emergency operating room today that the vice president is fine. She was taken back into another first floor room where Johnson originally had gone. Asked if her husband also had been wounded, she shook her head negatively. Secret Service men pushed reporters away and permitted no more questions. This is WBAP News.
We will rejoin David Daniel, of course, as developments occur. Now we rejoin the NBC television network.
Chet, there's also this. In Washington, the two president's brothers, his two brothers, Attorney General Robert Kennedy and his younger brother, Senator Edward Kennedy, are on their way to Andrews Air Force Base. They will fly to Dallas. Additional details from the hospital. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has not been injured in this attack on President Kennedy and Texas Governor Connally. The vice president is somewhere in the same hospital where the president is being treated, Parkland Memorial in Dallas. It is reported he is badly shocked by the shooting, that doctors are trying to keep him as quiet as possible, and that he is under heavy Secret Service and police protection. It's also noted that throughout the trip in Texas, when the president and the vice president have been in the same motorcade, they have been kept in separate cars, a precaution against just such an attempt as was obviously made today. Chip?
I referred a moment ago and read an excerpt from the speech which President Kennedy delivered to a breakfast crowd this morning earlier. The breakfast crowd of 2,200 people rose in ovation after the speech, and a few minutes later, the president said he felt like he did in France 2 years ago when he identified himself as the man who accompanied Mrs. Kennedy to Paris. You have anything else, Frank?
Yes, there was just a... Excuse me just a moment, John. There was just word from the hospital that they have dispatched a call for a neurosurgeon. I understand would indicate that one of the two had been hit in the head, would it not?
Or either the head or possibly some spinal damage. There is also this. Understandably, in a situation like this, the information comes in fragments and comes from unexpected places and uncontrolled angles. Senator Ralph Yarborough, Texas Democrat, who was in a nearby car when the attack took place on the president, said he saw the president's lips moving at what he called a normal rate of speed while Mr. Kennedy was being rushed to the hospital. How much it means, we do not know.
This is Edwin Newman in the NBC newsroom in New York. This information from Dallas. President Kennedy was given the last holy rites of the Roman Catholic Church today. That was, of course, after he was shot down by a would-be assassin while he was riding in a caravan through downtown Dallas. A Catholic priest who helped perform the last rites said he did not believe the president was dead. The Catholic priest, in other words, said he believed the president was still alive. The priest left the emergency operating room at Parkland Hospital, where the president is lying, and walked out of the hospital. We hear from Washington that Attorney General Robert Kennedy and the president's youngest brother, Senator Edward Kennedy, are on their way to Andrews Air Force Base to catch a plane for Dallas. Also in Washington, the director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, has, of course, instructed the Dallas office of the FBI to make an all-out investigation of the attempt on the life of President Kennedy and of Governor John Connally of Texas.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this NBC program to bring you this bulletin from the WBAP newsroom. Here is David Daniel.
Priests in hospital say President Kennedy is dead. Stay tuned for further developments.
Stay tuned to WBAP. We now rejoin NBC.
This is the latest information we have from Dallas. We are, of course, standing by to give you all available information as it comes to us. I will repeat with the greatest regret this flash. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he has died of bullet wounds. Now we join the NBC television network for the latest news.
Now, there apparently is word that this AP flash, this report from the two priests, that the president has died of bullet wounds, is confirmed. We will attempt now to get to station WBAP-TV in Fort Worth, Dallas, for confirmation. We go to newsman Tom Murphy.
Substantiating this, but not confirming it, is a report about 5 minutes ago by the Dallas Police Department to all of its officers that the president had died. Some 3 to 5 minutes later, the AP flashed that two priests at the hospital say the president is dead. Charles Murphy, returning now to NBC in New York.
Word from two sources. Again, it is not...
Bill, excuse me. We have NBC's Bob McNeil on the line now with a report. Please go ahead, Bob. White House Press Secretary Malcolm Kilduff has just announced that President Kennedy died at approximately 1 o'clock Central Standard Time, which is about 35 minutes ago.
After being shot by an unknown assailant during a motorcade drive through downtown Dallas. The president died approximately 25 minutes after the attack took place. He had been rushed bleeding and unconscious to the Parkland Memorial Hospital in Dallas and was given blood transfusions. About 15 minutes ago, reports NBC's Bob McNeil from Dallas, to whom I'm talking now, A priest emerged. After having given the president. The last rites. Just before the announcement of the president's death was made. Vice President Lyndon Johnson. Emerged grim-faced. And was driven away with a police escort. To assume. The constitutional responsibilities. Of the presidency. A casket. Has just been brought into the emergency ward. Of this hospital. For President Kennedy.
The attack took place.
As the president was just completing. What amounted to. A triumphal drive. Through downtown Dallas.
Encountering
the biggest. encountering the largest
and in some ways the most friendly crowds of his two-day Texas tour. Dallas police had put into effect the most stringent security precautions in the city's history. Because they had anticipated. There might be some demonstrations. Against President Kennedy. Like those which marked the visit. Of UN Ambassador Adlai Stevenson. On October 24th. Mrs. Kennedy, who was sitting beside the president, in the open car, was not hurt. However, the governor of Texas, John Connolly, who was also in the car, was wounded reportedly in the chest. And further supplies of blood. For transfusions for the governor. Have just been brought into the hospital. The shooting came. According to witnesses. From the second floor. Of a building called the Texas School Book Depository. Which is about 100 yards. From the tree-lined parkway. On which the president was driving when the shooting occurred. Three shots were heard. Frank, that's about all I can tell you at the moment.
Bob, thank you very much. We'll keep the line open. That was a report from NBC's Robert McNeil at the hospital in Dallas, Texas, confirming by way of word from the White House press secretary that President Kennedy is dead.
The death, according to Malcolm Kilduff, who was acting as the president's secretary on this trip, came roughly 39 minutes ago at about 1 o'clock Dallas time. There is further word that Vice President Lyndon Johnson was taken from the hospital, and he was not wounded. He has been taken from the hospital off to a secluded place. He will assume the constitutional duties succeeding now the late John Fitzgerald Kennedy, the former president, the late president of the United States. Now, it is necessary, even at a time when an event is fresh upon us, to look forward. We will do that now as we go to NBC News Washington,
Bob.
And David Brinkley.
I'm relaying your word.
The whole situation is, of course, that the Vice President, Lyndon Johnson, will be given the oath of office as President of the United States as soon as it can be done. I haven't had time to check this, but I believe the oath can be administered by anyone who can, justice of the peace, or anyone who can administer an oath. Had it happened in less unfortunate circumstances, he normally would be sworn in by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. But in this case, he will be sworn in by anyone who has the power to do it. That means, therefore, that Lyndon Johnson will be President of the U.S. and will finish out Mr. Kennedy's term running until January of 1964. What happens then, obviously, we don't know. The next in line for the presidency then, after Mr. Johnson, becomes John McCormick of Massachusetts, Representative John McCormick of Massachusetts, who is the Speaker of, the Speaker of the House. He is, as I say, next in line. We were told a few minutes ago the Air Force had four jet airplanes on the ramp at nearby Andrews Air Force Base, ready to take off for Texas, and perhaps by this moment they have. I don't know.
This is Edwin Newman in the NBC newsroom in New York. We switch at once to Robert Gorowski, NBC News, at the White House in Washington. There's some delay in getting to Robert Gorowski at the White House in Washington, who will give us the latest information from there about the death of President Kennedy by assassination in Dallas. Now we switch to Robert Gorowski at the White House in Washington.
Secretary of State Dean Rusk has just been
It's just been announced here at the White House that Secretary of State Dean Rusk and several other cabinet members who were en route to Japan from the mainland United States have been ordered to return. They were about 1 or 2 hours from Hawaii en route to a conference in Tokyo. Also aboard the aircraft is Presidential Press Secretary Pierre Salinger. It's not known yet whether the plane carrying Secretary of State Rusk and Mr. Salinger will return to Dallas or come back to Washington directly. There is still no verification or confirmation here at the White House of the reported death of President Kennedy. The staff that has remained behind here at the White House is getting its information via radio and television. They have no further information. Attempts are being made now by press officials here at the White House, pressed into service because of the lack of the ordinary persons that newsmen would contact, to reach Kenneth O'Donnell, presidential assistant, or Malcolm Kilduff of the White House press staff. The children of President and Mrs. Kennedy are presumed to be on the second floor at the White House at this hour. This was a school day for young Caroline in the first grade. John Jr. is also believed to be in the White House. They were to go to Middleburg, Virginia tomorrow for the weekend, at which time they were to have joined the President and Mrs. Kennedy. Here at the White House, the secretaries are ashen-faced. They're on the verge of tears, and I might add reporters are feeling the same way and look the same way. Robert Goralski, NBC News at the White House.
The last rites were administered to President Kennedy by Father Oscar Huber of Holy Trinity Church in Dallas. Of course, at this point, the information that comes to us is fragmentary. It has all to be pulled together. There was an eyewitness description of the scene from a man who was 15 feet away when the president was shot. This man is Charles Brehm, B-R-E-H-M. He said the president was waving and the first shot hit him, and that awful look crossed his face. The president died 44 minutes ago, 1 o'clock Central Standard Time in Parkland Hospital in Dallas, the result of an assassination attempt against him as he was riding through the streets of Dallas in a car with his wife, with Governor John Connally of Texas, and with Mrs. Connally. Mrs. Kennedy and Mrs. Connally are safe, though the last word we've had describes both of them as stunned. Governor Connally was wounded. He was shot in the back below the shoulder blade, was taken to the emergency operating room. Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who was not injured and who was riding in a separate car from that in which Mr. Kennedy was riding, was taken from Parkland Hospital under heavy police escort. He is to be sworn in as the next president of the United States. This attempt on President Kennedy's life was the third within 30 years on an American president. President Franklin Roosevelt was shot at when riding in an open car in Miami with Mayor Anton Cermak of Chicago. The president was not hit. Cermak died. President Truman was shot at when he was in Blair House in Washington. He was not hit. President Kennedy was shot at today and was killed. At this point, we join the NBC television network.
The United States was in a car behind the Kennedys and the Connellys. He is to be sworn into office as soon as possible. He rushed to the hospital and then was whisked away again by Secret Service men. His whereabouts, certainly, and as we can understand, is being kept secret.
Yes.
Kennedy lived about an hour after a sniper cut him down as his limousine left downtown Dallas. Automatically, of course, the mantle of the presidency falls now to Lyndon B. Johnson, a native Texan who had been riding two cars behind the chief executive. Here's one other little bit of information. The priests came out of the ward at approximately 1:37 p.m. Central Standard Time. The announcement by the two priests brought audible sobs from a crowd of scores of newsmen and other citizens crowded around the emergency ward entrance of the hospital. Senator Ralph Yarborough of Texas, talking only a few minutes before to the newsmen, collapsed in sobs as he told of witnessing the slaying of the president. Yarborough said he was in the third car behind the president. It seemed to him, he said, that at least two of the shots came from the right rear. He said he couldn't say anything about the third shot. So, that is the story. The president of the United States is dead. The new president is President Lyndon Johnson. The memories of, I suppose, all of us are flashing back to that warm April spring day of 1945 when we lost the wartime President Franklin D. Roosevelt. For many of us, this is the second time around that we have been through one of these crises. The last shooting incident, not fatal, involving a president, occurred in 1950 when President Harry S. Truman was in office and was living in Blair House in Washington. The High White House was being renovated at that time. You may recall that two Puerto Rican nationalists tried to gun their way into Blair House and assassinate President Truman, who was taking a nap at the time on the second floor.
In New York, an eyewitness to the shooting, fatal shooting of President Kennedy today, was NBC cameraman John Hofen. John, where were you when it happened?
Actually, Ed, I was along with the NBC cameraman Dave Wigman in a car, roughly four cars behind the president at Puttercade. We were just leaving the business district of Dallas when this shooting took place.
What did you see, John? What was the first you knew?
Well, we were making a sweeping curve here on the roadway approaching a freeway when the first shot rang out. Our first reaction was that some teenager had fired a cherry bomb. When the second one rang out, we sort of felt that there was something wrong. People started to drop down to the ground ahead of us, roughly 50 to 60 feet, up near the president's car. Then there was a third, and if I remember correctly, a fourth shot. Immediately after that last shot, the president's car took off at a tremendous burst of speed, followed by the Secret Service follow-up car, which we called, and being led by a squadron of motorcycle policemen.
That was to take the president to the hospital.
That's right. Our portion of the motorcade had remained behind momentarily. A cameraman had jumped out of the car and were making pictures. We did not know at that moment who had been shot or who had been shot, but we were doing the shooting. So naturally, we were shooting everything, any people on the ground or running.
Here is David Daniel, WBAP News.
The car wanted in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy this afternoon has been stopped in Fort Worth at the intersection of Belknap and Riverside Drive. Police have taken the driver in custody and are en route to the city police station at this time. There is no report that a rifle has been found in the car. Police first spotted the car on East Lancaster traveling at a high rate of speed. The Secret Service has been notified and are en route from Dallas to check out the car. There is no confirmation, however, that the driver of the car fired the shots which killed the president and wounded Governor Connally. David Daniel, WBAP News.
I would say 90 or 100 miles an hour with him.
John, when the shooting happened, did you actually see the president or Governor Connally? Could you see anybody in that car?
No, unfortunately for us, the president's car was the first car in the motorcade, immediately behind the motorcycle escort. Right behind the car is this large open Cadillac limousine, which is, I would say, has about six or eight Secret Service men in it. They immediately stood up and blocked the view, and then, of course, they surrounded the car, and then when they saw what actually happened, they jumped back into this car and went right behind his in his fast takeoff.
Did you see any police activity directed toward the assassin?
Yes. Two or three of the motorcycle policemen went running up this embankment. There was actually it was a high, long, gray terrace towards this office building. And one of them became so excited he fell off of his motorcycle and it charged up the grass a portion of the way. But they went and ran through there. We never were able to find out what they did. I since have heard that they have picked up a few suspects.
Yes, we've heard that. We do not know, however, of any charges that have been made against anybody.
When we arrived at the hospital roughly 3 or 4 minutes behind the president, we were stopped at the emergency entrance, naturally, by the state police, city police, and a few Secret Service who were still down on the lower level. And the Secret Service men who knew us asked us to please remain there, that they would do whatever they could to help us. Just as I was leaving with a phone in my pocket to make a delivery for to go on the air, Malcolm Kilduff, the associate press secretary on the president's staff, came over and quietly said, John, he said, they tell me the president has died. We did not have a strict confirmation at that moment, and of course I have been roughly a block and a half away from the hospital now since talking to him and talking to you.
Thank you very much, John. I must interrupt you because we want to switch to Robert Gorowski at the White House in Washington.
The American flag above the White House has just been lowered to half-mast, a solemn confirmation of the death of President Kennedy. As the flag was lowered, large numbers of people outside the White House noted the flag flying at half-mast. Most of them did not know what had happened. They talked to the White House guards, who had then informed them the President of the United States is dead. Large numbers of people out there now, probably about 400 or 500. They're standing, watching the activity as limousines come into the west side of the White House. Senator Hubert Humphrey arrived about 20 minutes ago. Reporters are still coming in, photographers. There's been contact with various congressmen, but still nothing more official about plans for the for President Lyndon Johnson to assume the office. This is Robert Gorowski, NBC News at the White House.
This is Morgan Beatty, NBC News, New York, taking over from this time. There's considerable confusion as to exactly where these rifle shots came from. As we could tell from our report down in Dallas from our own staff man, it's not clear whether or not they came from a building or from an area close to the underpasses, a triple group of underpasses, or whether it came from a building. Now, Senator Yarborough of Texas is giving us this kind of information. These are quotes. These are quotes from the senator just right after the assassination occurred. You could tell, he said, that something awful and tragic had happened. He said, I could see a Secret Service man in the president's car, leaning on the car with his hands in anger, anguish, and despair. I knew something tragic had happened. Yarborough had counted 3 rifle shots, others have said there were 2, as the presidential limousine left downtown Dallas through a triple underpass. The shots were fired from above. Now that we're sure of. Possibly from one of the bridges or from a nearby building. That's the senator's view. But another witness, television reporter, said he saw a gun emerge from an upper story of a warehouse commanding an unobstructed view of the presidential car. We've already had fleeting references to this warehouse building and a gun emerging from a window. So, you see, we still don't have enough information, and there are people under arrest. The sheriff's office in Dallas has several persons under arrest. And, of course, the report, the standard report is that they have a white man about 30 years old under arrest, and a rifle has been recovered from the scene of the shooting, and it was a foreign-made rifle. Of course, this kind of reporting is very difficult at this time. The police themselves are busy trying to organize, along with the Secret Service and other government agencies, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. John Edgar Hoover has issued orders to his men to cooperate, and they have not yet coordinated all of the information they have. But it's quite certain that they have a great deal more information about the assassination of President Kennedy than they are revealing at this time. And now, we switch to John Lavacek in Miami.
Havana Radio has just broken into its regular news broadcast with a bulletin and is broadcasting the news of President Kennedy's death to the Cuban people. The radio announcer, a woman, is broadcasting the regular United Press International dispatch from the United States. She is detailing all of the information she has at this time. This is John Lavacek, NBC News in Miami.
It's also clear from the reports we have that the Secret Service agents assigned directly to the president, that is, the men in the car or around the car with him, were almost certain he had been killed from the beginning. The president was shot. We can now...
It's Quincy Howe.
Quincy.
As a fellow citizen...
...through his head. The White House physician has now stated it was a simple case of a bullet straight through the head. At least one Secret Service man at the entrance of the hospital kept murmuring. One of Mrs. Kennedy's Secret Service men kept murmuring as the car went up to the hospital and the president's body was being taken out, that he's dead, he's dead. I'm sure he didn't know at that time he was dead, but Secret Service men know you can't be shot through the head, temple to temple, without being about as close to death as a man can be. And the question of administering the oath to the Vice President, Mr. Johnson, has still not been resolved, but the Secret Service has thrown an extraordinary guard around the Vice President. Mrs. Johnson was seen by reporters not too many minutes ago, and she was asked how the Vice President was, now the President of the United States, and she said, "He's fine." We repeat what we've told you before, that Vice President Johnson was not shot. The other man shot was Governor Connally of Texas. And the governor, by the way, has talked with Mr. Huber, his principal assistant. He is in apparently fairly good condition. He has said that he saw the whole thing, and they got the president, too, he told his assistants. The doctors have discovered that Governor Connally of Texas has been shot just under the shoulder blade in the back, and the seriousness of it has not yet been determined, but he's conscious. He's able to talk to his friends, and Mr. Huber said that the governor had asked him, he had asked the governor what he could do for him, and the governor had asked him, "Please just take care of Mrs. Connally for me." So apparently the governor of Texas is not injured as badly as it would appear that he had been at first. Incidentally, NBC News reports from Dallas that a car believed to be the assassin's getaway car has been seized in Fort Worth, and a suspect, a man still not identified, has been taken into custody. Also, a policeman also was shot and killed during the assassination. Incidentally, Fort Worth, as you know, is very close to Dallas, and a car could have got to Fort Worth with no trouble at all, provided the assassins had planned in advance how to get away from the motorcade in Dallas. Incidentally, a Negro woman rushed into the hospital where President Kennedy was taken with a wounded child. Now, whether the child had been injured in some other kind of situation or whether in the situation that occurred during the assassination of the president was not clear. The woman and the child were taken to the emergency quarters of the hospital. Incidentally, from Rome, the word is spreading very fast. England, we've heard from Havana, Europe, all are on the alert to news of the assassination of President Kennedy. From Rome, we have a report from Vatican City. Cardinal Francis Spellman of New York said tonight that he was shocked and grief-stricken to hear of President John Kennedy's death. These kind of statements, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be getting regularly and at frequent intervals for many hours to come. Incidentally, if the president was indeed alive, as most reports indicate he was, he lived about an hour after the sniper had cut him down in his limousine near downtown Dallas. The president was 46 years old, and of course, if it had been possible for him to have survived this shot, his vigor unquestionably would have pulled him through, but it was not. And incidentally, if you have any questions about the vice presidency, automatically the mantle of the presidency falls to the vice president on the death of a president. That means that he doesn't have to take any oath of office immediately. He is president of the United States. That's Lyndon B. Johnson of Texas. And as we reported to you, he was unhurt because he was automatically kept in another automobile so that there would not be the double close risk of the president and the vice president together in a situation of this kind, particularly in travel areas. And now let's see what they're doing on NBC TV News. At this point, they have new reports on the president's assassination.
The practice she's developed the last couple of days took the initiative in going over to the fence, and she and the president walked all along the fence, shaking hands with both hands, and the crowd was really delirious with them. And this kind of reaction was something like the reaction that was encountered in the big crowds all the way through the town. Very friendly. I saw only one hostile sign all the way through the motorcade, which went about 10 miles. And then suddenly, in the middle of this bright sunshine, the friendly crowd, and nobody expecting anything, these three muffled shots were heard. And it couldn't have been a more startling, gruesome contrast to the very pleasant, sunny, friendly atmosphere that he'd received, despite all the warnings that things were going to be difficult for him here in Dallas.
Why was that, Bob? Because of Adlai Stevenson's recent visit?
Well, this had been the thing that made the police worry, and Dallas got such a bad name around the world after the attack on Stevenson that the authorities were determined that there would be no repetition of this. You remember the ambassador was, someone spat on him, and someone hit him over the head with a poster.
They mobilized a third of their entire city police force with extra paddy wagons around the corner and everything else, and put on a strong propaganda campaign in the newspapers and on the radio and TV stations to make sure that the name of Dallas was not dragged in the mud again by any unfavorable incident when the president came. And that is why it was such a contrast.
What is the situation in the room where you are at the hospital now?
I'm in a little small waiting room where emergency patients wait to be taken into the operating rooms where they're treated. And there are a few policemen who are the only ones left in the long corridor leading to the room with double swinging doors, behind which we assume the president's body is being placed in the bronze coffin, which was taken in about half an hour ago, and from which we expect it to come out shortly.
Bob, we have a still photograph here in the studio that has just moved, and it shows a man and a woman and what looks like two small children lying on the ground. I understand you saw these people.
Yes, they were the first people I went to. I must have got there shortly after or before that picture was taken, when I jumped out of the press bus, and they, in common with many other people, were screaming and lying down in the grass to escape from the shooting. The minute the shooting sound started, the air was filled with the screams of women and children. A sort of very feminine wailing filled the air, and everybody lay down on the sidewalks, on the grass, on the edge of the parkway, and I assume that the picture you're talking about is that, because nobody else I know was besides Kennedy and Governor Connally.
We lost a part of that. You say, as far as you know, no one else.
As far as I know, no one else was hit other than President Kennedy and Governor Connally.
Now, Bob, again, about the area or the building from which the shot apparently was fired. Could you describe that for us and tell us about how far away it was from the car and how they would have been able to see the car from that distance?
Yes, well, I'll describe the scene. There was, as you come out of the main street of downtown Dallas, which was packed with people, it leads into a parkway called the Triple Underpass. And that parkway, which is lined with trees and lawns, takes a bend. And behind some trees on the sort of service road is a brick building of about 8 stories, which is called the Texas School Book Depository.
According to
witnesses, two of them who I talked to and the police talked to, say they saw a man with a gun in the fourth floor, a window of that building. Now, from either floor, Frank, he would be able to see over the low trees to about 100 yards away where the president's car was.
An unobstructed view, Bob?
I would think so. I was not able to go up to either of those windows, so I couldn't see for myself, but looking at it from the ground, it looked as though it would be. The president, therefore, must have presented either a profile to the assailant, if he was, in fact, in those windows where the witnesses say, and or his three-quarter back, because his car had actually passed the direct line from the window. You see, the way it went is the car would have approached the window head-on, then turned left and gone down a slight decline under the underpass. Just a moment, Frank.
Yes, Bob. That seems to fit, Bill, with what he said. The word that we had here was the president was struck in the right temple. Yes, Bob.
The body has been carried out.
Go ahead. Say again, Bob.
The president's body has just been carried out of the hospital in the bronze casket, and it was accompanied by his military aide, Major General Clifton.
And
it has been placed in an ambulance. I understand it is being taken straight to the air base where he landed for it to be flown back to Washington.
I see, Bob.
The crowds have all been moved away from the door by the local police and the Secret Service. I can hear the motorcycle escort outside with the ambulance starting up. And the president's body, with the police motorcycle escort, is now pulling away from the hospital. It is about 1.5 hours since he was shot. The president has been dead for about 1 hour and 7 minutes. Vice President Lyndon Johnson, who is now constitutionally the president, left immediately after the president's death was confirmed, and with a police escort went off to the airport, presumably to go straight to Washington to assume the constitutional responsibilities of the president.
Bob, returning to your earlier narrative, you had just taken us to the point where the president's car had turned, and I was about to ask.
Now, there were three cars behind him with Secret Service and several Texas congressmen, and then I was in the first press bus, the front of the first press bus, which came behind those. And just as we turned the corner, about 40 feet behind the president's car, I heard three shots.
Now, Bob, was the president seated or standing at that time?
The president was seated because there were very few people at that point. It was a thin crowd at that exact point. Most of the crowd had been concentrated a few hundred yards back. The president was seated. Mrs. Kennedy was seated. But when I heard shots, I saw people fall to the ground and was not looking for the moment at the president. The car immediately disappeared under the underpass and speeded up to go straight to the hospital. And I left the press bus and went to this building from which the shots reportedly came.
Mm-hmm. What sort of a building is it, Bob?
Well, it is a, I told you the title, it's the Texas School Book Depository. It's a orangey brick building of about 8 floors, and it was showing an expanse to the street of maybe about 8 windows wide in the front.
Well, Bob, from the point where they think the man with the gun might have been seen
yeah.
to where the president was actually felled, would it have been possible for him to have been struck by a bullet in the right temple? That's his
Well, I believe that if he was using a high-powered rifle with a telescopic sight, one policeman told me he understood it was a high-powered rifle. I don't know about the telescopic sight. I assume that from that distance it could be.
I see.
It could be.
About how fast was the president's motorcade going at the time of the
firing? Slowly. It was about, by that time, having just gone around the corner, it was probably between 15 and 20 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm. And Vice President Lyndon Johnson was how far behind?
I'm not sure, Frank, which car. There was a jumble of congressmen in the car immediately behind, and I'm not sure which car Vice President Johnson was in.
And then you say, of course, that the motorcade speeded up immediately and rushed toward the
hospital. And disappeared under the underpass, and I had jumped out by that time and was running with the police. They thought the assailant had fled over some railroad tracks, and they chased him through what they thought was the assailant, through several trains. Standing on the tracks, and I went with them and therefore didn't see the president immediately as he went under the underpass.
Well, did they apprehend this person they were
chasing? No, they apprehended nobody at that time. They went back and started talking to witnesses on the scene.
I see.
Just a moment, Frank.
Yes, Bob.
Which car was
there is also this that could be added. We have...
Frank, I'm told that Vice President Johnson was in the car directly behind the president.
I see. Now, Bob, from the point where the assassination occurred to the hospital is about how far in time and distance would you
say? Well, it's about a mile and a half. I was able to commandeer a private car.
Hold it, Bob. We have a little information
Frank,
please.
We are now going to the United Nations where I'm told delegates from the member nations are expressing their condolences to Ambassador Adlai Stevenson. So we switch now to the United Nations.
I call now on the Secretary General.
Mr. President, as Secretary General of the United Nations,
Bob,
I would like to express
profound
sorrow at this most tragic event and to be associated in the condolences to Mrs. Kennedy, to the members of the bereaved family, and to the government and people of the United States.
I request members of the General Assembly to rise and observe 1 minute of silence in tribute to the memory of President Kennedy, after which I shall adjourn this meeting in sign of mourning.